I'm Carol Hills with The World. Thousands of migrants on the move, hoping for a better life in Western Europe. It's the story this summer. And for New York Times correspondent Rukmini Kalimaki, it's also an echo from her own past. She and her family fled communist Romania more than three decades ago in 1979. They traveled through Hungary to Germany, just like the refugees from Syria are doing now. Rukmini, you write in The Times, "I was 5 years old and I had been told we were going on a holiday to Paris." When you look back, were there certain signs that something was up?
There were a lot of signs. For one, Tata Geo, or Father Geo in Romanian, who was my adopted grandfather, who I was very close to, he used to walk me to school. I could tell that he was sort of in a dark mood. And the morning of our departure, he broke down crying. He started sobbing. That's, I think, the first time when I realized something is really off. And I asked him, "Tata Geo, why are you sad? Are you sad that you're not coming on vacation with us?" And he said to me, "Tata Geo este trist," which just means Tata Geo is sad.
You thought you were going on a vacation, and were there limits on what you could pack? I mean, were you just able to take a little bag? How did that work?
Yes. So the night before, I remember lining up my stuffed animals and interviewing them, trying to decide which ones of them wanted to come with me to Paris. Paris was where I had been told that we were going. And I tried to stuff them all into a suitcase. And my mother came in and saw what I was doing and scolded me and said, "You can only take two." And so I ended up choosing a doll and my favorite stuffed animal, which was a stuffed bunny. And then when she wasn't looking, I managed to squeeze in a very small elephant, which I have to this day, and a couple of coloring pencils.
You know, like today's wave of migrants crossing to Western Europe today, your destination was Germany. But after leaving on the train from Bucharest, you crossed into Hungary. What do you remember about the journey?
First of all, my mother and grandmother, who were the ones traveling with me, were very tense. My grandmother opened her prayer book and started to pray. And we pulled into a train station. I remember the train conductor coming in and inspecting my mother's papers and my mother sitting very stiffly. And the train was about to start moving, and suddenly a woman came running up to the window of our compartment. She was clearly an official of some kind, and she started banging with both fists, on the window, screaming very loudly in Hungarian and poking her finger at us. And I understood that she didn't want us to be there. And my mother looked terrified. I've never seen such a look of fear in her eyes. And the thing that saved us is that the train had started moving and she wasn't able to stop it. Later on, we were stopped at another train station, also in Hungary, in the middle of the night. The conductor came in and they told us to get out. And my mother woke us and we put on coats over our pajamas. And we walked outside and he looked at our papers and he said to her, "You know you're not allowed to be here." And she says that she started weeping. And for whatever reason, he pointed to the train and said, "Go." And we were allowed to get back on the train and made it to Germany. So then as now, Hungary was a very difficult place, a treacherous place for refugees or migrants, however you wish to call them. It certainly was for my family, and I think it certainly is today for the refugees streaming through.
Wow. What happened once you reached Germany?
We got to Nuremberg, Germany, and back then, this is, 1979, the Soviet Union and the Iron Wall was still in effect, and they actually had an office very close to the train station where you could essentially go and ask for asylum. So my mother went to this office, and they immediately gave us housing, but the rule back then was that you could stay 1 week in a particular country before being forced to ask for asylum and residency in that particular place. And we decided to continue on to Switzerland, where we had one very distant cousin who was living there and who had offered to help us. And I think 3 months later, my mother, my grandmother, and myself, we were all awarded political refugee status.
In Switzerland?
In Switzerland, yes. I stayed there until I was 10, and then we immigrated to the U.S., I have to say that I'm profoundly grateful, both to the officials who led us into Europe in the first place and even more so to the U.S. immigration officials who awarded us citizenship when I was a teenager.
You write that it took you years to understand that you weren't on a holiday.
Back then, the parenting style is that a child was a child and you don't explain, grown-up things to them. And so nobody bothered to tell me that we were not on a holiday. And so I kept, for the first year, I remembered that I achingly longed for my best friend. Ilinka, who was my age and who I'd left, you know, who was in the same kindergarten class as me. And every day, you know, Ilinka, when am I going to see Ilinka again? And then sort of a year into it, it dawned on me that, wait a second, I don't miss Ilinka. I miss my dad and I miss my grandfather and I miss everything else.
I'm wondering whether your own experience, how it affects how you're viewing this current episode of thousands and thousands of people fleeing their countries and trying to reach a new place to start a new life.
Right. It obviously reverberates. You know, I recognize the fear that I think I see in their faces. I recognize the feeling of complete uprootedness. There's a French word that that I don't believe has a very good English translation. It's dépaysé, which means literally without a country. That feeling of being without a country, of being without a home, is something that I think never goes away. You know, I speak fluent English. I own a home in America. I've done both my elementary school, my high school, and my college education in the U.S. And yet, there's an emptiness that never goes away. There's a sense of uprootedness that never goes away. And people in America always notice that I'm not from here. I don't know what it is about me. I don't know if it's the way I dress, the way I look. Is there an accent that I speak with? But every single interaction I have with people who don't know me and who look at my name or who see me at the bank or, you know, the lady at Chase that I call to ask about a charge, every single one of them begins the conversation with, what an unusual name. Where are you from? Ironically, I get the same question in Romania. In Romania, I also come off as not being from there anymore. I do now speak Romanian with an accent, and I do dress, I think, differently than most people do in Romania. So they notice right away that I'm not from there. And in the end, I mean, it's not a terribly big deal, but it does contribute to a sense of rootlessness, which I recognize, I think, in the faces of the people that are streaming across the border now in Hungary.
You write that there's sort of a before and after in your life.
Of course, yeah. I mean, the before for me was this place where I felt very secure, deeply loved, and where, in a way, I knew my place in the world. You know, I was a 5-year-old Romanian girl, the daughter of a doctor and a dentist, living in Vasile Conta in downtown Bucharest. And ever since then, who am I? You know, I really struggle to answer this question, where am I from? And I get asked it several times a week. In moments of annoyance, I'll just tell people I'm from California. But people are never satisfied. You know, they always want to know, no, really, where are you really from? And I'm like, well, I was born in Romania. I didn't, you know, spent a couple years in Switzerland. I just came back from Africa, where I spent the past 8 years of my life. Where am I from? I don't know. What should I say?
I don't know. I'm one of those terrible people. I'm always curious. I love to know where people are from.
The way to phrase it is, where's your name from?
Where's your name from? Okay.
Right? Because then it doesn't imply that you don't belong here.
Okay, that's a good one. Rukmini Kalimaki is foreign correspondent for the New York Times. Thanks so much, Rukmini.
Thank you for having me, Carol.